Pretty sure Bernie had some sense of humour.
A sign you saw?
No. I go in and ask for two slices, and he asked me for ID. I said, what exactly do you put on your pizza? I think I get the joke a little bit differently. He was from probably a country that, you know, or probably from a place where he would get carded. You know, he would get.
Wow. For buying pizza.
Anything, just for looking at it. And how this world is.
I don't. I can't figure it out.
You got the right language, the right suit, the right gait.
Yeah.
You know, the right priorities that will satisfy who knows who and who knows what. That the doors open up.
Yeah.
And then just look at what news is pushing on us right now.
The news.
Another war. Pushing for another war.
They won't stop. They can't be stopped. If we're going to outsmart the bastards, we might have to do so interdimensionally rather than terrestrially.
Yes, yeah, something.
If the oligarchical momentum of siphoning through fossil fuel exploitation and pharmaceutical exploitation, military-industrial exploitation persists, and it's likely to persist, then it assures an appointment with extinction. And some folks that are, you know, of a certain ilk have been forecasting, you know, various calamitous events forever, whether it's confrontation with lizard aliens or economic collapse, or grid and infrastructure collapse, climate, etc. So, you know, you could say as a reasonable person, not even an exaggerated person, that there's not much time remaining for this level of tension and surreal exploitation and confrontation to persist. So it's possible that maybe not every human, but maybe quite a number of humans, or perhaps even the majority of them, are facing a period of, you know, peril. We don't see what I would call, you know, Christian voices. Voices of reason or accountability. Voices of faith. Voices that honor the poor, the downtrodden. All we see is, you know, hubris and grotesqueries in the, right, conformist media. So if those forces have pursued control over the terrestrial realm and won control over the terrestrial realm, then we have a date with extinction. That could be any minute now. And for people that follow climate and Arctic and things of that nature, they're crying. They're at the point of weeping now because there's no longer any space between the commencement of rapid climate destabilization and the current milieu. They're seeing evidence of it all over the planet, all over the biosphere. So we arrived. We made it. We've opened the Pandora's box of, the cessation of civilization, which was perhaps unavoidable from, who knows, the get-go, the conceiving of it, or certainly the discovery and exploitation of fossil fuels meant that we could expand the population base exponentially on the heels of what we thought was cheap energy, never realizing until even perhaps it was too late that the exploitation and burning of fossil fuels would ring the death knell of the great expanse of population centers. By the time either scientists or government or politicians or industrialists or whomever kind of got wind of the ramifications of rising global temperatures and the threat of carbon dioxide and eventual release of methane from the tundra and from the warming Arctic, by the time they realized that that was a risk factor, it was too late even for them to do anything about it but siphon and pillage.
Yeah, it's an exponential situation, isn't it?
Yeah. And, the human mind, brain, sentiment, and wiring is really not capable of an altruistic, instinctive appreciation of the exponential outcomes of fossil fuel exploitation or population expansion. And we're still not, though plenty of sober voices, I would say non-conspiratorial, sober, concerned, down-home voices are out there ringing the bell.
Yeah, Michael Mann and his hockey stick breath, that shows that, warming and the multiplier effect of the...
Now, whether it's lizard people from, an unfriendly planet masquerading as the Koch brothers, or it's just the fucking Koch brothers, it doesn't matter. Those few people that have, let's say, money and wherewithal are likely building bunkers and investing heavily in, survival stores and for survival facilities. And whether they outlast we commoners, and for how long, is anybody's guess, because we won't be around to see them emerge. Now, the tendency of we human beings is, of course, favors denial, whether it's in our local affairs, our emotional affairs, our spiritual affairs, and in all other respects.
Well, I tend to be fascinated by our ability to adapt, under extreme circumstances. But
well,
the amount of people that can adapt is quite a bit less. I'm making an assumption, but
yeah,
it seems as though the comforts have become essential.
Most of the extreme circumstances that, let's say modern Homo sapiens have weathered are their own wars. In terms of the killing of tens and hundreds of millions of people through starvation, marginalization, weaponry, and, etc. And, of course, there's a bunch of speakers out there that, wave the flag of, we've never had it better. And so post-World War I, post-World War II, post-Korea, post-Vietnam, post-Iraq, Iran, Kuwait, post-post-post, many, many more human beings today are living under more peaceful, stable, surrounding and circumstances than perhaps ever before in the history of the species. Mm. And let's say those, you know, altruistic enthusiasts are not mistaken. But that's, of course, not the whole picture. You know, it's barely possible for us to cope with the anomalies of the day. The anomalies of my small-minded life. Let alone to cope with the much grander perception and perspective of the acceleration of global warming and the collapse of habitat. We don't know how to relate to them unless you've been and are being presently affected by it, like if you live on an island where the ocean has risen 2 feet and is taking out the perimeter of your village, or let's say if you're living in post-hurricane Puerto Rico and you don't see anyone investing in the recovery of your infrastructure, food, water, electric, education. And so we have a serious refugee issue, right, from the island of Puerto Rico, as we have refugee issues from the African subcontinent and the Middle East and all over the place. And these, the pressure of refugee migrations on the local culture is exacerbating, you know, xenophobia, right, and ultra-right-wing conservative politics, which all turns in the direction of globalist fascism. And those are the words, most of the narrative we hear pouring out of the present administration's mouth is globalist fascism. Hiding behind the rubric of xenophobia or, you know, evangelical Bible-toting misogyny toward same-sex marriage, toward people of color, toward trans people of, you know, alternate sexuality. So rather than the welcoming, forgiving tolerance that might have been taught by, you know, the Christ consciousness, which is ideally to be upheld by persons like the Pope or the Dalai Lama as best he can under his, you know, own stresses of being wiped out by China. You know, who do we turn to? So the what's being demanded of us?
Yeah, I see that
far exceeds our present capacity or interest to respond.
It's you know, the irritant that keeps coming back to center related to that is this hyper-identification with group and alliance with that, and then opposition with other. And then you have it, they don't touch it, rather than,
yes,
hey, we're all in this together.
Even within even within affinity groups, you know, territoriality, power, injury, mishandling of, you know, each other, is quite prevalent. I mean, everyone living, let's say, in Russia is not holding hands and saying, aren't we all outrageously having a great time? You know, that is an autocratic, fascistic, mob-ruled culture, as is China's. And, you know, the United States perhaps has always been that way. And, you know, by virtue of its so-called Christian ethos or roots, makes it seem otherwise.
If you function within certain parameters, you're off the radar. But if you go outside of those parameters, the heat is on, in a sense.
You can see it everywhere. You know, people are poisoned, people are assassinated, people are marginalized. People are of, let's say, good conscience that might have an influential voice are at once seen as threats once their influence is, you know, comes up on the, you know, the radar, taken out. It's easy to take them out. In today's technology, codependency, manipulation of, you know, audio files and video files, you can make anything appear true. If you have an enemy and you have technology, yeah, you can make anything appear true.
And I think we're wired to deceive when we're being fooled, but some ignore that, I think. No, don't question. I question maybe too much. I don't know. I'd rather be overly questioning than overly fallible.
Yeah, well, you know, you are true to your nature.
Although that might be why I'm still single.
No one would say you're the great communicator.
I was going to say there's two sides to every coin, but if you have a pyramidal shape, you get all kinds of, you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 sides.
Yeah, right. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yes. Hey, how's it going?
How's it going? Good to hear.
Oh, yes. Going great.
Nice.
Is the people actually wanted an answer to that question?
Not really.
Yeah. I think so. Boys Club tonight, huh?
So far. You always have to crash it. Three available men. Oh, not quite available. You're married.
Yes. But happily married.
Yeah. And you're in the first 2015, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think that would be right.
The only time I saw you all dressed up.
Oh, that can happen again. Come to my funeral.
That's right. You quite have a say in that.
Who knows what they'll put me in.
We'll make a closed casket somewhere.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Make sure to put some bacon fat in, so when they put it in the fire, it'll be like,
Oh, boy. With the dystopian future that we were somewhat pondering.
Mm.
I was imagining, you know, just futuristic movies like Delicatessen, Soil and Green.
Oh, yes.
You know about those, Ryan?
Soil and Green, yeah. It's people.
Soil and Green is people. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, and Delicatessen, I'll just give you a really brief thing. Again, this is dystopian future. The Delicatessen, when it opens, something has happened prior to that.
Oh.
Granny dies. So, anyhow, I like to imagine a different future, but...
And you should.
Or...
It was only slightly worse than the one that Jeff imagined, so...
Yeah. Well, I don't have any imagination myself. I mean, I've had, you know, visions of extraterrestrial craft coming in over the horizon, but you don't know whether those are, you know, prophetic or just,
you know. Any mushroom?
Yeah, mushroom related. That's right. So, you know, whatever vision I have is I'm borrowing from others that have more of an opinion about just how gnarly it will get if things get any hotter around here. Well, being outdoors today, you know, when there's cloud cover and the, you know, the breeze is up, there's a certain, you know, coolness to the body, and it's nice. And a few times the sun came out from behind those clouds, unabated, the intensity of the radiation on the skin was like, whoa.
Hmm.
And it's, you know, April, it's just still prior to the middle of April.
Yeah.
But I felt over the last several years that there's just something about the lensing of the sun. That is a lot more intense than I recall.
Psychological, I'm going to say.
I hope so.
When you get off, I'm not saying the sun isn't hotter, but I doubt your ability to detect like, not hotter, but yes, sending through more rays. I doubt your ability to detect as much.
Well, then you would be, let's hope you're correct, and that would mean that if the sun is hotter, it's, you know, undiscernible to the skin of a human being.
You could probably put a thermometer or, you know, some other way to measure, you know, whatever radiation or something out there, and it might be picking up, you know, higher levels, but I don't know if you can.
I don't have any way to, you know, prove it or insist. I was just noticing the feeling of how cool it was and then how intense the direct sunlight was for early April.
It could be the ozone is thinner.
Yeah. More or less, it's my own imagination.
Maybe that's your city, your sun.
That is my city, center. That's right. I'm a sundial. That's right.
Sun boy, yeah.
Yeah.
As his others would respond to the moon.
That's right. If your planet gets sensitive to it. One's, you know, one's imagination is very solicitous. And, you know, the streaming nature of the data field, you know, easily suggests, you know, hypnotic waves of experiencing and what appears in and as experiencing, and the narratives, subtle and gross, that accompany that experiencing without effort. So the contemplative arts have aimed to facilitate a quality of attention, cultivate, you could say purify, a quality of attention that is not does not run away with its own dreaming nature. So the dreaming, right, the flow of narrative and association doesn't have to call it stop, but one's attention, one's capacity for just, you know, object-free curiosity learns how to wean itself from the right visitation, the implication of daydreaming, of narrative. So then one occupies a more textural, nuanced relationship with present experience as the habit of objectifying and building time by virtue of comparison and projection comes to a deeper relaxation. The present experience becomes, as it has perhaps always been, more, much more than enough. Because one's relationship with it is direct. The sense of being the middleman or the recipient of experience, or the doer and the knower and the planner and the executor, that just naturally relaxes. So it's, let's say, arguably, enthusiastically possible to reside or abide in present experience as present experience without the, you know, nagging habit of being the experiencer. Without the habit to plot, plan, consider, and measure or discern, then really you just have this euphoria, unscripted euphoria. You don't have to go into a trance, though you're welcome to. You don't have to have any knowledge or magnificent insights about anything. You don't have to predict the future or articulate a more palatable past. This isn't about anything, and neither are you.
It sounds to me like unconditioning the self.
The self is a, you could say, a movement. What we call self, or what we call ego, you know, depending on how belligerent, crafty you want to be about it, are, you know, shorthand, perhaps pointers to the streaming nature of, you know, self-absorption, self-reference, the conditioning. So the deconditioning of what we might refer to as self or ego is simply a matter of withdrawing one's attention from the engine of self. You don't need to drown, let's say, your mind out, or hypnotize your mind with mantra, though that can be a path and a vehicle and an on-ramp for sure. Simply by learning how to tune into the unscripted and euphoric nature of present experience, you go direct. Learn how to, let's say, trust it or trust yourself.
Yeah, so it's not really a doing.
No. Not in the way what we call the mind likes to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not a contrivance.
That's right. It's not a contrivance. The self, the ego, right? The referential nature of identification and territory and personality is a contrivance. And you could say it's the conflictual nature of that contrivance, which is at the core of, you know, our challenges as a civilization, as a species, as humans, as being, you know, welcoming, intelligent, or xenophobic and violent. But conjecture, I don't know. You can draw certain, you know, lines, ley lines between one symptom and another, wishing to hold one thing responsible for, you know, an outcome. But maybe it's stranger than that.
Like putting the playbook down on the table.
Yes.
Otherwise, it'll constantly lead to the next game, the next play, the next maneuver.
Yeah, that's
positioning.
Right. Yes,
that's the quest.
That's the nature of that, you know, game. Yeah, the mind is gaming us by, you know, soliciting attention into a never-ending, somewhat inexhaustible stream of where you've come from, where you are now, what you need to do and think and feel about everything. But just shit, put that down. Wasn't, you know, some of the essence of St. Francis's teachings to be of, right, the simple, unadorned nature?
So much so, he threw his robes off.
Mm-hmm. He got naked with his bird friends.
Yeah, someone chucked him a piece of cloth and wrapped him.
Yeah.
Cover that up, buddy.
Yes.
But yeah, apparently he liked to drink. He liked the ladies.
Far out.
He didn't care for the merchants, clothing merchants, or whatever it was.
Yeah. So we're exploring a simplicity, you know, which is doesn't have to be a demonstrative renunciation. But that may occur, you know. If a human being becomes more and more nourished by the euphoric nature of present experience, then you could imagine a certain simplicity, you know, occurring.
He'll stop eating.
Could be. Could be, yeah, sure. You know, I would guess it's happened, right?
Like Siddhartha with the one grain of rice. And then he said, what the hell is this? What am I doing here?
That was before the fact.
Yeah, then it just kept going. This avenue, and it would peak, and then this one would peak. And it did come back to a simple presence. Nothing, you know, that could be written about.
Came back to full man mode. He sat down and he said, this is it. We end this here. This
oh, yeah.
Damn tree.
That was a heroic event. Yeah, that was for sure man mode, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, bring it. Yeah, that was like the world wrestling, whatever that's called, WWE.
Yeah.
It was a smackdown between the Buddha and Mara,
yeah.
Hulk and Andre the Giant.
Yeah.
Yes. That's cool. Yeah, you know, the whatever the human body is or taken to be, human sentiment, you know, ideas, the challenges and stresses and joys of, you know, living, either alone or together or in relationship with whomever. Now, this is a profound field of, right, sensuality and ideas and engagement and relationship and nourishment of that relationship or the failure of it. And we're under, you know, you could say tremendous pressure to perform. Some of us are more aggressive than others. The psychic pressure to justify ourselves, validate ourselves, remedy ourselves, recover ourselves. It's enormous. And in the midst of that, why wouldn't it be possible to learn, acquaint oneself, and then, if you want to call it practice, the weaning of awareness and the weaning of attention from imagination, from objects. Takes, right, a little interest. It takes a little courage, you could say, to amp up the, let's say, the nature of one's contemplative practice or contemplative interest. To a different level of engagement. Where do you think you're going to end up if all your questions are answered, or even if most of them are not? Right back here. You don't ever leave, right? The cauldron of whatever presence is. We don't make this better or more understandable, you know, by spending a life having and getting a shitload of questions answered, either to our satisfaction or otherwise. Osho ran around in, you know, quite a handful of Rolls Royces, and some may have experienced it as a heaven realm. Others maybe not. But if you are nourished, let's say, you start to discover the euphoric nature of present experience, and you're nourished by that as that, then you're not really interested in a religious or spiritual or doctrinal loyalty game. You're absolutely free from cosmology, and you don't need to change the world.
Do we think Osho was like halfway enlightened and just still messing with people?
Yeah. You know, let's say you put a bunch of these enlightened people like in a barrel. Remember that, you know, the game Barrel of Monkeys? Plastic monkeys that had hook arms? Yeah, so let's just put all the enlightened people in a barrel and then shake it up and then throw them out on the floor. And then, you know, see how they play. See what the hierarchy is. So, like, was Jesus higher than Ramakrishna? Was Ramakrishna higher than Aurobindo? And was Aurobindo higher than Yuji Krishnamurti? And where does Osho and Nichiananda fit in that? Or Ananda Mayi Ma? Or any one of, you know, Christian or Japanese or Tibetan saints of all kinds? You know, it's impossible to hierarchize any of that. So, was Osho something or otherwise?
He was already on the ground when he dumped the bucket out. He was like, yeah, I'm here, it's me, look at me.
He was a master of, you know, hypnosis and broadcast energy and intelligent and way ahead of his time, edgy as edgy could be. And so he, you know, elucidated, or he brought forth, right, incredible qualities of energy from a certain milieu, certain generation, that was the product of what it was the product of. You could argue, just for fun, that, you know, if his so-called realization were, you know, deep enough, that he might have avoided the scandal of creating an institution based on messianic principles and dysfunctional devotion.
Isn't it like a symbiotic dysfunction?
Absolutely.
You have a culture that is predisposed to hero worship, and then they want to take over. They want to be that. Either consciously or not consciously.
Look at the simplicity, you know, of my own reach or my own hand. I mean, you know, if what was Garth and Wayne? What Mike? If Mike Myers could be mini me, I'm mini Osho. Right? I'm anyone is just as capable of the same messianic impulses and interests mm-hmm. and fantasy without having large influence over 50,000 people as he was. So it's all just, you know, levels of scale, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You've got all kinds of people in dysfunctional family relationships, marital relationships, sibling, drug addict, right, relationships. And they're all, you know, mini tragedies. Oops. And symbiotic. Mm-hmm. In the way that they're symbiotic.
It's almost like you want to break the GPS.
Oh, yeah.
GPS saying, you have arrived at this location. There it is, the center. And it's like, lie, big lie, biggest lie.
The dismantling of what we might refer to as conditioning includes coordinates, GPS coordinates, whether space, time, place, right, relevancy, condition. Yeah. Yeah. Right. That's right.
Holy ground and not holy ground. It's like what?
Yes. Be relieved slowly, suddenly, gradually, willfully, or otherwise, of the habit of reference is unchartable. Because here it is, exactly that, and yet we can find ourselves operating inwardly in relationship, you know, influenced by the apparitional nature of reference. Where I've been and where I'm going and who I am and what I have and what I don't and what I justify with respect to my appearance and my relationships and my parents, my clothing, my money, my health, and everything else you can think of. So we are, you know, streaming forth in an apparitional manner, presuming all the while that we're the ones making the choice and the decision and crafting, right, the persona based on will. When it's at least clear, I trust, from time to time, if not all the time, that we're not. That anything that's going on in you and as you is, you know, as an improvisational myth pouring forth from a persona structure that you had nothing to do with. It's quite clear
that there's
I had nothing to do with me.
But there is some sort of a connection because it's like I'm not a woman. I'm not Asian.
Okay.
You know.
I've got some bad news.
You're an Asian woman.
You're an Asian.
Yeah. And we're interested in you.
Well, gosh, then I don't have to find a relationship. I am it. Go on, man. Okay.
I hate to break it to you. You're pretty hot.
Oh, jeez.
So, all right, you know, yeah, you could contrast, you know, what you are and what you're not, just from a gender.
A certain awareness lands somewhere and
yes.
It becomes something, and it mistakes the creation as their own.
Yes.
But yet somehow it's they're tight, you know, and why here with this and not there with that. And I'm just playing.
Well, sure. I mean, that same, if I may take the liberty to refer to it as, you know, kind of randomization, is true of the entire electromagnetic spectrum mm-hmm. and the so-called expanding universe, or how many spiral galaxies don't have massive black holes when the expectation is that they should.
If you happen to be in an area that is called, a kidney is called for, you become kidney.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Whatever, a supernova.
Cellular specificity and cellular differentiation in, you know, what the biological field or the insect field, if that's biological, of course, or perhaps even in the mineral or the photonic or the neutron star or the whatever field, are like, oh my God. Yeah. How does anything become, reflect, behave according to its nature? And at what scale? It's so dumbfounding that it's just not possible to grasp, even with the greatest of mathematical or scientific tools. You know, phenomena, and that phenomena is experienced, and that we have, you know, terminology or ciphers for consciousness or the absolute, is like, I am way over my head.
I just had this very strange notion of a cell in my body waking up and going, wait, there's a lot more to this than meets the eye.
Bingo.
The escalator up and up and up. And
up.
I am Dave.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
It ain't all you think it is.
That was a beautiful day. I am Dave. I am
more.
Not an Asian woman. What a miraculous discovery.
John Malkovich.
Exactly. Malkovich. Right. Welcome to my hell realm.
Oh, boy.
I mean, even right now, whatever that suggests, and, you know, that's a mystery, that's an unsolvable puzzle as well. If there were right now, what would it be, and how are you could say, experiencing whatever right now is? According to what bias, what capacity, what degree of sensitivity? You know, what narrative? I mean, if your spleen doesn't hurt, then, you know, that area is kind of empty, relaxed. You don't feel it. If your foot's not asleep, you might not notice it, right? If you haven't been insulted lately, either by the IRS or some other party, then, you know, maybe you're a little lighter. You're traveling lighter, like Paul would say. So, you know, it's by virtue of tension and resistance that we're aware that, you know, there is something appearing in the experiencing or perceiving field. And we, of course, assign and associate ourselves as being the recipients of, the willful choice-making recipients of, the curious myth of experience, curious demonstration, the curious irrefutability of experience. It anthropomorphizes like that. Even though, I mean, are you you? If you're 60 trillion cells functioning at levels of intelligence that you will never, ever be aware of or capable of understanding, are you you? Let's say you're the outcasting of a miracle, dwelling in streaming euphoria, completely non-referential. No violence is left in you. No violence remains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's right. That's this.
Yeah. Yeah, because the quest seems always tethered to a person. An identity of a quester.
So you can see another example of a tension apparatus. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. Mm-hmm. So the appearance of a tension apparatus as myself, as the seeker, as the sufferer, as the perpetually unsatisfiable, goes seeking for one thing or another. You know, one night it's a fifth of Jack Daniels. The other night it's whatever. You know, if I've got a really serious addiction problem, shit, if I'm not going to four meetings a week, I'm going to be in jail or dead, or both. So even that, you know, pulsing intensity occurs. And yet, through all this, whether we're sanguine or, you know, shit out of luck, we likely still insist on free will and free choice and decision and everything else we'd like to throw at the, you know, splurging myth of anthropomorphization. And if we're the product, cooperatively or otherwise, anarchically or otherwise, of a so-called, you know, society or civilization, well, then we are super fucked. We're just collateral damage for someone else's bad idea. And then we adopt that bad idea as ourselves. That's why it's good to play guitar really loud. If you can, and you're good enough to.
That's another high that I haven't thought of in a long time. Cranking that up. Merging with the music. And creating it. Personal consumption, I'd say. Not a grand stage.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But it has that euphoria in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, go shaman on this. Now, you could say, just for fun, the two principal challenges of life are A, discovering that you are a shaman, and then figuring out what kind of shaman you are.
Don't squeeze it.
Just don't squeeze it.
Don't squeeze the shaman.
Don't squeeze the shaman, as they say.
That's an old film commercial. Of about streaming yesteryear.
Yeah, you know, in a sense, every culture is... culturally isolated. I mean, we have a, you know, what we would call a so-called American culture.
Melting pot.
Growing up in, you know, what might be referred to as the Northeast. In a, you know, more or less suburban sprawl with some, you know, remnants of rural spaciousness. But 30 miles from here, it's a whole different culture and community. The churches, police force, the population density. And then 30 miles from there, even in the same glorious Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, it's completely different. The terrain. Even though, you know, you can go to a Denny's in pretty much any state in the Union, and be, you know, either well or mistreated. It's completely different. And that's within, you know, a more or less short distance of where we imagine we find ourselves. But then go anywhere in Africa or South America or down under, right? Russia, China, Europe, you name it. Like, who are you people? What the fuck?
Yeah, I really like the, being in an environment that's diverse. It makes it easier to let go of the strong hold of identity to, say, half Italian, half Hungarian, whatever the Catholic school I went to, that identity and so on and so on, educational identity, because you have that variability, like you said, within 10, 20, 30 miles, 40, 50 miles. This mixture. But there, at least a way of witnessing that there are millions of ways of being present.
And that, and just started counting.
Not just this conditioned one that,
yeah,
that seems like it's the groove, maybe.
With the relaxation of reference, or as Bob points out, the relaxation of identifying as the witness. Then you just, you, what? Non-referential, non-judgmental, non-orientative, if that's a word, euphoria. Not so much having freedom of what to think, it's freedom from placing any emphasis on thought at all. It doesn't mean you can't find your keys or to roll up a certain number of leaves of toilet paper to, you know, keep yourself politically correct.
My mind was going to different leaves.
Yeah, when you said roll up, I was thinking of something else.
Yeah, I was like, no, I like that one.
I like that one, too. Have a doobie with a friend.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Trusting that those functions are intrinsically... They self-regulate.
Isn't it quite interesting that the whole system, and you can take whole system to mean the whole system, whatever that suggests, you know, the inclusivity of all that has been, let's say, perceived or known or named. The whole system, the entirety of so-called phenomenon, whatever that is, being perceived by the likes of us, whatever we are, through the sense windows that, you know, the biology gifts has been gifted with to be sensitive to, right, certain wavelengths. I mean, touch is a wavelength, right? Smell is a wavelength. Hearing, seeing, tasting are all wavelengths. I mean, dogs can smell stuff that would blow our minds. And they have a, you know, spontaneous cipher or relationship with that capacity of aroma that so far we don't think processes through a symbology system that we have. And yet they can function quite miraculously in response to the gift of that, you know, aroma sensitivity to find all you need, which is sex and food, or, you know, or the avoidance of danger. Someone that's synesthetic, who might be deaf, you know, hears music through the sensitivity of their spine. So the, you know, the bandwidth and the vibration of the bandwidth on a biologic, subbiologic level is like, holy mackerel.
Yeah, psychic told me one time, even, you know, from that level without a body, she said from one frequency it's color, another frequency it's shapes, another frequency it's sound, another frequency it's light, you know, all within the present.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, and we're this, like, tuner. So
and what is presence without the, you know, curious demonstration of the frequencies? Nothing at all. You know, so the slightest hint or sense of self or sentient viability without narrative is like still a profound demonstration of, right, bandwidth and scale. Whoa. I mean, is it I think, therefore I am? Or I am, therefore fuck you? You know, or I am, therefore fuck me. I mean, where does I am come from? And I don't think anyone is, you know, still naive enough to think that I think, therefore I am. The presence of the irrefutability of the presence of whatever experiencing is not dependent on thought. Kojic Cogito ergo.
Yeah, that's a
eat me.
Thought's a narrator in the sort of same sense, or claims authorship at some point.
The miracle of thought is appearing in the, you know, boundary free plasma of, call it consciousness, awareness, sensitivity. Thought's not defining. It would like you to think it is.
Well, it functions in sort of a in a way that likes to define and distinguish. At least the thought that I.
It's very interesting. You know, is thought conjuring what we would call distinguishing, or is distinguishing conjuring the texture of thinking?
Okay, I like that. Just turn it inside out.
Why not?
As opposed to, what did you say, continuity? The mind looking for continuity, you could turn it inside out and say equally. So continuity, opposite of continuity, what do you got? Like coming from the left, coming from the right.
You bet.
2 steps up, 3 steps down.
Yeah, that's right. You know, our language and the way that we use it, whether we're making I statements or not, you know, let's say by habit is geared toward the false pride of anthropomorphization. That's how our language operates. You know, the way that we use the power of distinguishment and discernment, measure, comparison, and then value propositions has a lot to do with, you know, what I would call my body, my sentiment, my emotion, my entitlement, my rights, my this and that. You're like, yeah, okay. It needn't. Language needn't be used, you know, habitually in the service of the, you know, humorous error of anthropomorphization. You know, just for fun, maybe in acting class they do this. You know, you just take on a brand new nonsensical language and you express from there. Biggity da watching gila. Heza masa waka like a nini foo. Wrong waka chewin sakal. Gang frut emberlukchlak. Twicka twicka wise among ananafe. Hana ha 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 ha. Ricket.
He's a Pentecostal.
Yeah, you know, I was like, well, that guy, he's fucked up, man. Or he's cool. I mean, we respond, you know, to presence and tone of voice. And
I'll go to that lecture.
Yeah, the implication of what's being spoken. And if it's pure gibberish, we could still have a good time.
Oh, yeah.
Communicating, you know, richly.
That's fun. That is fun.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah, you know.
Takes you out of the mind.
Next time you're at the grocery store, talk to yourself in who knows what.
Be careful doing that in public.
Yeah, quietly, of course.
I saw a funny prank. It was one of those, like, magician, like, street magician guys.
Mm-hmm.
They, like, did one quick prank and then said, like, all right, like, hold your, you know, I'm going to hold my hands here and then move your head in a figure eight right here for 60 seconds and then open your eyes. And they puts his arms out, and they start, like, bobbing their head back and forth. He just slowly walks away. And somebody calls security. Mm. Security guards would come and look at this person bobbing their head, you know?
I see.
The security guards like, oh, come on, not today.
Really? We're busy. You know, it's the grip of the familiar. The tenacity, the inertia of the familiar starts to drain from you. Well, wow, then you are gibberish. Right? We take our minds too seriously, don't we? We take our tendency towards narrative and distinguishment, discernment, and projection way too seriously. We don't see that, you know, that we are just gibberish in motion.
That's interesting. The energy communicates.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you might see patterns in it and then it creates a language, or it, and I don't mean person, I mean the field, discovers a bandwidth of sorts.
Fletchum Bandersol, Swalinga, Paragabam, Sigridai, Gurchum, Green, Zippy Doo.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, yeah, what he said.
The people that take themselves too seriously should fill a room and just go up there and say,
yeah,
I know you're all here tonight to take away something.
Yeah, but try this out.
Fasten your seatbelts. It won't be pizza.
Yeah, and if you were to play with it, you know, just for your own, like, experiment, how long could you keep up opening your own gate and coming up with, you know, gibberish and the rhythm and the timbre and the, right, the percussive nature of it just for fun? And I bet you if you did it long enough, I mean, even 5 minutes, let's say, out loud, alone or with someone else, just for fun, you would have no fucking clue who you were, where you were, or what was going on. Mm-hmm. You could dismantle the hubris of orientation.
Well, you know,
fairly simply.
You know, that's what Terrence McKenna reported, right? He would smoke a bunch of DMT and then go see the machine elves.
Yeah.
They were just like little balls, like, and they would just glossolalia, like.
Yeah. Yeah, and he'd start talking, right, in their tongue.
Well, yeah, he said they made him like vomit it out.
Yeah.
Like, just rising, and they'd be like, yeah. And they'd be like, come on, do it. And they'd be like, ugh, and it would just come out of them, and they'd all be like, ah, freaking
they
out.
Started laughing, yeah. Like, exactly. Yeah, the machine elf started
one
laughing.
Of one of the bus.
That's great. Yeah, he started talking in tongues, and they were flipping out with laughter. I like it. You can see how, you know, proud we are, unconsciously, semi-consciously, of, you know, the prowess, the capacity, the magical capacity to use language as a cipher to dictate the world, to conjure a world. We're very, very proud of it. What would it feel like to take refuge in presence, as presence, without requiring any further entertainment or security? The abatement of restlessness and becoming, plotting and scheming, making friends and enemies based on, you know, the matrix of your imaginary superstitions. What would it feel like if there were no more noise in your soul?
I was just going to say, but it doesn't quite cover it. If one of the senses I could give up would be sound. Yeah. But that doesn't cover what you were just pointing to.
No.
Rather than the cacophony impulses. Just unbelief.
That's the invitation. That's the vipassana. That's the dzogchen and the avaita. Kashmiri bliss. It's exactly this. There's no intermediary. There's no processing. Clever means. Why not learn what it feels like when there's no noise in your soul? And do so in the most sparing manner. Without reliance on authority, process, justification or knowledge, idolatry of any kind.
Seems a lot simpler.
You know, let's say you took a leap, and instead of, forgive the word, teaching, right, or soliciting human attention, right, human sensibility, you just bypassed that, and you just go straight into nirvana, which is what this is. And you don't have to conjure or cajole or seduce or influence the apparatus of, you know, human identification. You don't have to engage it. You don't have to touch it. You don't have to make nice to it or give it, you know, a purification ritual or justification or anything. You bypass it entirely. And how can you do that? Well, easily. This is already the nirvanic field, so why make a big fuss about it? You can see, you know, if you've been to as many fucking spiritual talks as I've been, and I don't say that proudly, how the typical right recipient of the conversation filters the so-called teachings through the apparent implication of what it means to me as a person, right? As a formerly suffering or presently suffering person, or a person that would like to suffer less someday by virtue of the gifts and secrets that you're sharing with me. So, yeah, don't do that. Don't engage in a conversation that sets up and reinforces the myth of the person, or time, or space, or coordinates, or implication at all, and therefore healing nothing.
Like picking the scab, constantly having an open wound.
Okay, so this is not about you. It's never been about you. And the you that, or me, the you that you or I or whomever take themselves to be, is a fig Newton of present imagination. It's just not so. You can bypass it without effort, without having to, you know, justify anything. Whoa, here we are. You know, here's nirvana up your ass. This is referential plasma of nonspecific euphoria. Start there. Rather than having to wade through, right, the detritus of the imagination of myself to think that I can make some effort to break through from what I've been to something else. You can't. The human cannot break through from what he, she, or it has been to something else. It's always too late. So, you know, therefore, year one is invited. This is inviting us, if there were an us, to, poof, right, direct, call it non-dual, non-referential encounter as oneself. Oh, well, yeah, I get, oh, wow, cool. Far out.
Full access.
Absolute, full access, which is what this is. And even the sense of, you know, having been a suffering person, becoming, let's say, entertained or excited by a different course of action, that's gone. You don't need to resolve anything in yourself, in your life, in your imagination, even if it really sucks. Which, of course, as it really sucks, is more difficult because then there's, you know, enough tension and stress in the system that you keep going back to it to try to, you know, resolve, ameliorate, heal, get over, you know, whatever you need to get over. And unfortunately, there's way too much, you know, pressure and exploitation amongst 7-point-something billion and warming. So it's kind of a gift, really, to, you know, hang out without the resurrection and reinforcement of mental and emotional and psychiatric and somatic angst. Just bypass it entirely. Who else is going to give you that gift but you? Nobody can. And even if you could hand it out, right? The plucking of it is up to you. No one is forcing you or anybody to remain under the, you know, influence of being a person. So if you find yourself, once you've done a certain amount of yogic work to even appreciate how you're operating, you need to do some yogic work to appreciate how you're operating, so there is some level of discernment, distinguishment, practice, consideration, right, contemplation, or yogas of many kinds, just so that you can begin to see, right, a little more clearly, a little more impersonally, wow, the nature of mind, the nature of attention. Because if you don't create a little bit of space, then you think you're you, and that you're you because you chose to be you. Good luck with that, muggle fucker.
I think when people buy into the choosing thing, they put like a weight on their back and say, if I chose how the F did I get in this mess, I must have chose wrongly. There must be a rightly choice. And then you get all hooked into the cause and effect of, you know, hey, they made it work. Look at this, I didn't make it work, something's wrong.
Yeah, you know full well the theater of anthropomorphization and how quickly it seduces your attention into all of that and more. It's theater. Acting. Baudelaire.
I noticed even in imagination as well as out there in observation, that the ultimate position that I may have dreamed of as a child or last week, it is just another plateau that will want something else. It might want to chill and go down, or it might want to say, is this it? Is there more? Or it might just untether from selfing altogether.
Well, yes, and all of that insight still has a certain qualifier associated with it, which is, how have I been, how am I now, and how might I otherwise be?
Well, I'm kind of looking at it, not so much as me, but I guess it. I guess there is a me that's looking at it.
You, it's
can't
subtle.
Can't get away from it.
Well, that's...
We're deep here. Going deep.
We're in deep, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not me, but it is me looking at it. That's it.
Tag, you're it. You can't get on from that. Sticky, sticky.
I'm not trying to, you know, wishing to, let's say, criticize free association or language or thoughtfulness of any kind. Because, hey, that's what we do. I mean, right. The order of pizza.
It's a clever mentation.
Yes.
I get that.
Just looking at the clever way in which it anthropomorphizes self, and that the language reinforces an idea of who and what you've been or are or might be.
Oh, yeah. I'm a professional.
Oh, well, we all are, you know, not to diminish your skills.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So clever, it seems to even make sense sometimes.
Doesn't it? Yeah. I'm so clever, I even seem to make sense
got
sometimes.
That. Ooh, kind of had some juice to it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not to make a big issue out of it either.
Right.
Because you're just like, I'm an idiot. Okay. Right. Keep it really simple.
Yeah.
Oh, this dreams? Wow. That's it. This dreams, boy, does it dream. Okay, far out. But you don't have to be a product, an outcome, an implication of anything. Discover the noiseless nature of your rapturous soul. Then discover it again. Try it again. Feel yourself, let's say, from the curious orientation of a whole novel realm of primacy, then as the creature. Wow. The reflex to interpret or express present experience through the lens and the familiarity of the creature, that's what we're looking at. That is that really essential? Is that really true? Is that really necessary? You know, in Byron Katie's work, she does that same kind of, you could say, essential authenticity, but she does it through the lens of, you know, the judge your neighbor worksheet. So it typically has to do with, let's say, some kind of complaint or disappointment about either self-image or the things that are bothering me as a person. I know she's quite capable, you know, and probably intoxicatingly so, to take it well beyond there. But she, you know, you could say by choice, if there were one, hangs out at a certain level to, you know, do a certain kind of offering to the people that purchase her service. She doesn't really make an emphasis in her teachings.
And there it is. You wonder why the group is so small.
And you wonder why the group is so small.
We're just far too advanced.
We're far too advanced.
We have to
That's right.
Take it down for the less capable students like me and Dave. I mean.
Bottom of the barrel.
Yeah. Yeah, we pretty much hit the bottom of the barrel.
Now this is the cream that like cream.
Yeah, that's right.
That would be at the top, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The only two that made it this far, everyone else has stopped and deluded upon the line.
They got drunk on the nice day.
Yeah. Food champions, Dave.
You know, it can feel like, you know, one is being, let's say, put upon by, you know, too enthusiastic an alternate view. And that sense of pressure, I would suggest, is because I'm trying to interpret whatever might be spoken about in the way that it's spoken about through the lens of familiarity. And here's the magic key. You needn't interpret anything at all through any lens. So even though, you know, it might appear as if we're speaking using the English language in, you know, blasphemous or gibberish-like tones, no, we're really just playing around with the, you know, texture of presence. And reinforcing through conversation a certain kind of permission to not know what this is.
I mean, you do say some blasphemy shit, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like an antidote to the dream.
Hey, man, the dream is like, you know, it's tenacious. The dreaming and our association with the dream and the dreaming appears to be rather tenacious. Just try to have this conversation with anybody. You know, you'll get a broken nose if you're lucky.
Yeah, somebody was saying that, you know, they come and they got it and they said, oh, it just kind of sounded like the same thing. I said, yeah, it sound like the same thing, what we do.
Yeah, don't you sound like the same thing?
To reify, because I asked myself, I said, yeah. There seems to be many opportunities to untether from that groove or from that the cleverness, the intellectual cleverness. I know I'm still a person trying to get towards and away from something, but
it's the orientation of familiarity.
And it's like a verbal mantra in a way. Yes, there is a repetitiveness of a certain focus, but how often does one think in that way? It's almost thought to neutralize thought. Now, again, I'm looking for antidote.
Well, you can, you know, you can explore the nature and texture of consciousness, of communication, of language, implication in time, and you can see, you can discover curious, right, things about it, curious observations that appear to be, you know, causal relations between one perspective and another, thinking and feeling and what thinking and feeling seem to conjure. And it's so, yeah, I mean, the invitation is like, let, permit, or not, awareness just to kind of open to a non-judgmental, non-presumptuous appreciation of its own nature. Both its nature as, you know, kind of conditioned repetition, and its nature as a noiseless soul.
Noiseless. Because it's almost like I bring a collection.
Oh.
And the collection is stuck to me over the week or whatever it was,
yes,
or the day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I get to divest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not by any coercion. Or
hopefully not.
Or having to do it or not do it, but just to see that it's, you can travel lighter and fly higher. To use a metaphor. Yeah. And then it might happen again. Of course it will.
Sure.
And it's similar form or different form. But I like it. It's like getting a haircut. And I never get haircuts. It just sort of falls out, whatever it is. But this is like a thought cut.
You know, the journey one might take toward whatever self-realization might be it's the discovery of the ground of being. This is the ground of being. My interest in this makes me feel alone in the world because I can't share it with anyone.
Are you just reading something?
Mm-hmm. I hear that.
Uh-huh.
I hear that.
Now was your chance to make a move and get another member.
That's right. Come to the front and get the book.
Yeah.
You can always tell when it's just after 9.
Mm-hmm. You have gas?
Yeah, it's like study hall when I had my head down until 10 seconds before the bell would ring.
Oh right, yeah, you've got that. It'd be like inner sense of timing.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's nice cubicles. Yeah, I was quite the scholar.
If you can't, you know, come to the Night Sky Sangha Salon, then start one of your own.
There you go.
You know, be willing just for fun and experimentation to feel this and find whatever voice you have, one has, to express it.
Strange how it always feels like I need to be doing something.
Uh-huh.
Be a productive member of society.
Yeah. This is truly a fuck off club.
Maybe that's why I feel so comfortable. I hope he gets to call me a bum here.
No, here you are. Worshipped. Baba Bum Dave.
What do you mean you haven't been productive for...
Yeah. Dude, you haven't been productive for how long? Oh, you win. You're the speaker this evening.
The counselor asked me, how many days did you work this month? And, you know, I have little jobs here and there, so I collected it into 5 full days.
5 days. Yeah.
Yes. 5 days.
You're semi-retired.
Yeah. It's slow. Or I was slow. Making up for it now. But I like not being like that. Something pressures inside and it just doesn't do it like it used to do it.
Mm. Nice.
Cutting myself a break. You know?
You're making progress.
Yeah, I got 2 matching shoes.
That's good, considering it's you.
Yeah, you don't put your shoes on in the dark. Yeah, 2 different.
This can be really, you know, may I use the word devastating? Because we are so profoundly affectionate or not, and familiar with ourselves as ourselves, the texture of ourselves, the nature, the sound of our voice, the sound of our thinking, the way that we wander through the places that we live, how we use the bathroom, how frequently we shower, what we like to eat, how we socialize. I mean, we're like, you know, remarkable. And in this kind of dialogue, in this kind of exploration, you know, you might be lucky. You get a chance to spy a certain discontinuity. And you could say, enjoy the view, which accompanies the cessation of your idea of self, of your idea of being yourself. That can be very soothing, you know, awesome and abiding, and really intimidating. And if it gets serious, as it gets more serious, which means it's become more endocrine null and not just, you know, philosophical.
Weather report is then you'll be in trouble.
You're being done. Done and undone by, you know, call it a force of nature, kundalini, whatever you'd like to call it, that bigger, better, smarter than you. What happens if our, you know, let's say lifelong interest in exotic spiritual states starts occurring? And it's not your control drama any longer. For the longest time, I thought I was pursuing, you know, euphoria. Marginally satisfyingly, and then euphoria caught up with me. Now I'm running from euphoria. You know, the tables have turned.
Higher octane.
Yeah. Yeah, this has got you in its sights. For the longest period of time, you were dancing around going, oh God, notice me. Oh God, notice me. I want to be your, you know, agent of peace and happiness and harmony, and please notice me. Never quite serious about that, but why not? You're making a big fuss. So then God took notice of you and said, oh, okay, fine. I'm going to cleanse your soul.
Yep, that's serial numbers.
I'm going to take all the noise out of your fucking system. I'm going to give you more euphoria than you can handle. Because you've reached out. You've solicited my attention. I took notice of you. I'm going to gift you with what you really are. Good luck with that. Hang on to your dick. Or whatever it is you got. Hang on to that.
I'm an Asian woman.
An Asian woman. That's right.
Never.
Dave, I've got some more bad news. You're not actually an Asian woman.
I'm not.
You're a guy with two different shoes. I'm a guy with two different shoes, and I thought I was an Asian woman. What is this world coming to? What's it ever been?
Same as it ever was.
Same as it ever was. All right. That's enough of that. Hey, thank you out there in internet land for joining us this evening. We appreciate your company. We look forward to making your acquaintance again.